Ever notice how Sunday evenings feel different when something's wrong at work? That knot in your stomach, the dread creeping in as the weekend fades? Now imagine that dread intensifying until you're physically sick at the thought of walking through your office door. For millions of workers, this isn't anxiety. It's the lived reality of workplace mobbing, a collective form of psychological warfare that can destroy careers, health, and lives. Unlike the stereotypical office bully, one bad boss making your life miserable, mobbing involves entire groups ganging up on a single target. Think of it less like a schoolyard fight and more like an organizational witch hunt, where formal systems and informal gossip networks combine to systematically push someone out. Research suggests up to half of American workers have experienced this phenomenon, yet most don't even have a name for what's happening to them. The critical distinction between bullying and mobbing changes everything about how we understand workplace abuse. When Jim's micromanaging boss makes his life hell, transferring to another department solves the problem. But when Linda becomes the target of a coordinated campaign, where her manager and the COO collaborate to build a case against her, strategically plant rumors about an investigation, and systematically poison her reputation, changing departments won't help. The organization itself has become weaponized. Mobbing transforms institutional processes into weapons. Performance reviews, HR investigations, even seemingly neutral documentation all become tools of elimination rather than management. While 72% of workplace bullies occupy positions of power, mobbing features fluid dynamics where subordinates can successfully target superiors by building coalitions. The assistant coaches who spread gossip about their boss, the administrative staff who forget to include someone in meetings, the colleagues who suddenly go silent when the target enters the room, these aren't isolated incidents, but coordinated patterns. Who becomes a target? Research demolishes the myth of a mobbing-prone personality. Victims span every personality type. What matters is social positioning. Those who challenge policies, expose problems, or don't conform. The immigrant faculty member whose accent marks them as different. The woman who speaks up in male-dominated meetings. The whistleblower who questions unethical practices. Difference becomes dangerous when organizational culture values conformity above all else. Statistics reveal 35 to 50% of U.S. workers experience hostile behaviors weekly. Workplace mobbing follows a predictable trajectory. It begins with ordinary conflict, disagreements about methods, personality clashes, competing priorities. But instead of addressing these constructively, management lets them fester. People take sides. A target emerges. Then unethical communication begins. Gossip spreading like wildfire, rumors treated as facts, half-truths woven into damaging narratives. Consider Dwayne, a football coach whose wealth and international experience marked him as different. When conflicts arose, staff didn't address them directly. They searched for damaging information, reinterpreting everything negatively. After a losing season, Dwayne was fired. When memorabilia went missing, his understandable anger was weaponized. The group labeled him potentially violent, a classic mobbing tactic of provoking emotional reactions, then pathologizing them. 7 warning signs mark the transformation. Management pathologizes workplace conflict instead of recognizing it as normal. Focus shifts from issues to character attacks. Unethical communication spreads unchecked. Bystanders fail to defend victims. Management fails to intervene. Management blames the victim. And finally, management places responsibility for resolution on the victim, then blames them when it continues. Management often participates through strategic inaction. The principal who didn't know what to do as staff destroyed Dwayne's reputation. The HR director who claims they can't get involved in personality conflicts. These acts of omission enable systematic abuse while maintaining plausible deniability. Mobbing emerges when individual, group, and organizational factors align. Individually, tying identity to work increases vulnerability. Those who define themselves by their job title experience mobbing as an identity assault. Coping styles matter. People with surrender religious coping, trusting a higher power handles what's beyond control, face less emotional exhaustion than self-directing types who believe they must solve everything alone. At the group level, teams sometimes create a common enemy to strengthen cohesion, explaining why they mob someone labeled a problem. Organizationally, structure, culture, and leadership create mobbing-prone or mobbing-resistant environments. The Thomas McElveen case, who killed four postal managers before taking his own life, illustrates this convergence. Initially blamed on personal problems, analysis revealed systemic mobbing. USPS prioritized speed over care, enforced harsh discipline, and practiced authoritarian leadership. After 1996 reforms, manager training and threat investigation, reported assaults dropped significantly. The problem was organizational design, not individual pathology. Work provides more than income. It offers meaning, connection, and identity. With over 90,000 lifetime hours spent working, we form genuine friendships with colleagues. This makes mobbing devastating because it attacks survival and belonging simultaneously, what researcher Heinz Lehmann called psychological terror. The betrayal cuts deepest when former friends become weapons. A coworker who once trusted you with her sealed will later denies your friendship existed, shares distorted personal information, and vanishes entirely. When victims complain, supervisors dismiss them as overwrought, insisting they resolve conflicts themselves while deliberately ignoring the systemic attack. When meetings finally occur, HR representatives appear unexpectedly, shifting the dynamic from support to interrogation. Supervisors produce years-old negative memos from shadow files, unofficial documentation containing unsubstantiated opinions stored as ammunition. In the final elimination phase, victims resign or face termination for being difficult or not team players, rarely for work quality. Neuroscience confirms that social rejection activates the same brain regions as physical pain. Degradation narratives constructed to justify exclusion follow victims for life, destroying reputation and employability, while financial losses compound rapidly. Mobbing inflicts measurable damage, best understood as injuries rather than illnesses. You wouldn't say someone got sick from being hit by a car. Research links it to coronary heart disease, gastrointestinal problems, headaches, sleep disturbances, chronic fatigue, and impaired immune functioning. PTSD ranks among the most common anxiety disorders from workplace abuse. Today's economic realities create a painful bind: stay and endure abuse, or leave and face financial uncertainty. Victims obsessively replay traumatic events, questioning why they became targets. Unwelcome images of instigators intrude into thoughts. Nightmares become regular. Even workplace symbols trigger distress. Entering work produces chest tightness, sweaty palms, racing heart. Depression frequently accompanies mobbing. Consider Laurel, a radiologist targeted after critiquing a nurse's unprofessional comment. Despite appeals to HR, she was told nothing could be done. The nurse's ongoing hostility forced constant vigilance, making her second-guess decisions and doubt her competence. Isolated and unable to seek employment elsewhere due to family considerations, Laurel became seriously depressed with little energy for work or family. Workplace mobbing devastates far beyond the primary target. Kenneth Westhues called it the stressor to beat all stressors. It infiltrates every life aspect, disrupting commitment, trust, and emotional warmth. Consider Matt and Phil, a same-sex couple strained when Matt experienced mobbing at a construction company with homophobic managers. Matt's withdrawal and irritability created distance. Phil felt hurt and doubted Matt's story. Classic pursuer-withdrawer dynamics emerged. Matt conserved energy by isolating, while Phil sought connection. The work problem mirrored itself at home. Mobbing severely compromises parenting by undermining presence, emotional connection, competence building, and modeling positive values. Mobbed parents become preoccupied with workplace trauma, mentally replaying events, and struggling to make sense of their experience. Workplace bystanders suffer significant collateral damage, with 9 to 70% reporting such experiences. Most choose inaction from fear of becoming targets themselves, though victims experience this as betrayal. Bystanders suffer physical and mental health symptoms mirroring the victims, but at lower intensity, sometimes exceeding distress levels of emergency workers. About 22% eventually leave due to the toxic culture. Organizations harboring mobbing incur substantial penalties, higher turnover, increased medical leaves, absenteeism, worker compensation claims, and litigation expenses. U.S. organizational costs from workplace abuse range between $180 million and $250 billion annually. Recovery from mobbing depends on severity, duration, public humiliation, isolation, trauma history, and available support. The process begins with grieving profound losses and developing a coherent narrative, essential because mobbing shatters fundamental beliefs about fairness, justice, and competence. Fighting back carries significant risks. Organizations that mob employees possess vastly superior resources and have already demonstrated their willingness to play dirty. If choosing to fight, establish strict rules, secure reliable support, set firm limits on time and resources, and adhere to these boundaries religiously. Most critically, don't make fighting the organization your next career. Many victims have lost everything trying to clear their names. Rebuilding social support is essential, though challenging, as coworkers typically distance themselves, a high betrayal trauma associated with severe psychological symptoms. Counter isolation by seeking entirely new environments, language classes, art workshops, dance lessons. The goal isn't immediately making close friends, but regular, meaningful group participation. Healthy workplaces are respectful, accountable organizations that don't tolerate mobbing. Most people displaying mobbing behaviors are normal. Mobbing results from complex interactions between individual, group, and organizational factors, where group pressure creates personal disinhibition. Repairing damage requires four essential elements: acknowledging wrongdoing, apologizing for emotional harm, taking reparative actions like providing withheld information or meaningful references, and compensating for material losses. While victims can never return to life as it was, these actions help reclaim dignity. Workplace psychological safety isn't a luxury, it's a fundamental human right requiring courage, compassion, and accountability.